Question 117. See ye not all these things? Mark 13, 1 and 2. And as he went out of the temple, one of his disciples saith unto him, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answering said unto him, Seest thou these great buildings? There shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. Matthew 24:2. And Jesus said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. While traveling in the country, one can see skyline after skyline and wonder at the marvel of man's handiwork. It's difficult not to be impressed by the accomplishments of modern man. We've made great strides in workmanship and the fight against nature's oppositions. There is a beauty in the skylines and in the individual buildings. It's a beauty that tends to glorify man. One is carried in thought to the creator, designer, or the construction worker, or the owner of such edifices, but seldom is one turned to thoughts of God and his part in the project. One of the disciples was fascinated with the beauty of the temple and all its magnificence and proclaimed, Master, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. It's clear from the text that Jesus was not to be impressed by it. It was as if he saw something they did not see, or saw it in a different light. Was he warning us about something? Why did he not just go along with the conversation and be nice and cordial and say, My, my, yes, they are spectacular, aren't they? Why did he have to be so solemn and decline to participate with their enthusiasm? Are we witnessing a sullen Christ preoccupied with his impending death, as it is only days away at this point? Or is there a dire warning to us in his question? If Jesus walked the modern streets of our world with us, we would not act differently than the disciples did and would probably seek to engage his enthusiasm about the miracles of modern man. Setting aside for a moment the fact that he is well aware of all things man has accomplished over the centuries, we would likely try to show him around as if we would any stranger that visits us. We might take him to Cape Kennedy and show him the Space Center and the accomplishments in our past. We may boast of the strides in modern building construction, the technological leaps made in semiconductors and electronics, satellites and telecommunications. Perhaps we would brag about our medical and pharmaceutical progresses. We would have him to be impressed with man and his accomplishments by gorging him on the best of the best in every area of our modern civilization. Can you imagine what he would think of the internet? Imagine us walking around with the Son of God, showing him who we are, rather than sitting at his feet and learning who he is. It becomes a foolish endeavor to impress God with man when man is so unimpressed with God. We'd be inclined to show him the best of our accomplishments and neglect to show him the darker side of our world, as we may flaunt our amber waves of grain, but hide from him the world's homeless and hungry who have little of it. We would show him our beautiful buildings, but not our alleys behind them, our highways, but not the gutters. We would likely try to impress him with our most recent medical breakthroughs, but not our psychological failures, with our rising standard of living, but not with the disintegrating family. We'd show him our worldwide network of satellite television broadcasts, but we'd be ashamed for him to see any of its content. Would we tell him that our marvelous internet is now the major conveyance of the world's pornography? We need not wonder whether Jesus was overly solemn as he was shown the wonderful accomplishments of man. It'd be difficult to overlook what one knows is wrong, to admire any rightness in it. I remember a sports car in the 70s that everyone wanted to own. Everyone, that is, except auto mechanics, because they knew what was under its shiny skin. When one knows the inner workings of something is severely flawed, it's difficult to get excited about its appearance. Truer words are harder to find than, "All that glitters is not gold." The disciples asked, "Do you see all these great buildings?" Jesus responded, "See ye not all these things?" When we're impressed with the world and all its glory, we're succumbing to the glitz and the hype. Madison Avenue, the advertising mecca of the world, requires that people do not see the whole picture in order to peddle their wares. If you're impressed with the world, it's likely that your eyes are closed, whether by choice or by hypnosis of the media. If you're enchanted by what the world has to offer, you're likely far from sober. If you find yourself seeking the newest and the fashionable, you may want to reevaluate your relationship with truth, reality, and love. For it's hard to sell the world's goods to a person fixed upon the important and real. One who shuns that which will entrap his soul, or one who has the love of the Father within him, can hardly see past the danger or the cost to thrill at the thought of possessing it. The ads convince us of what we want, when what we daily need is all that is safe for us. Nothing sharpens a man like pursuing what he needs, and nothing dulls a man like pursuing what he wants. What is sufficient for the day at hand is all the evil we can bear. How do you feel when you read, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever." If you feel dread and anxiety, guilt, or even anger when you hear the message in these words, it's likely that you are too deeply entangled in the world. Has your judgment been altered, or your priority shifted by shiny stones of temporary beauty? Are you led by what you see, what your flesh craves, or what fulfills your pride? The enemy says, "Don't you see all the world has to offer?" Christ would ask, "Do you not see it for what it really is?" Our friends, our co-workers, and even our family may say, "Get with the program. You can't live in a shell all your life." We're constantly encouraged, whether subconsciously or overtly, by friends, by family, by advertisements, to look and admire, to be amazed and dazzled, to yearn and desire for that which the world offers. We're told what's pretty. We're told what's acceptable. We're told what's gauche and ridiculous. We are enticed by the media. We are lured by the ads and told what is new and improved and what we need and what we can't afford to be without. We're led to believe what is modern. We are told what is right and good, what is pretty and useful. We are persuaded to believe what is fundamental to a happy life and told what should be considered basic necessity. It will take wisdom beyond our years and discernment beyond our capabilities to know what is the truth. We must not yield our attention to the loudest debater, nor should we look in the direction of glittering sequins, but rather listen to the still, small voice. Jesus was well aware of the exquisite stones that graced the temple. He also knew the ugly side. He knew Herod, whose money and political motivations propelled the project. He also knew the brevity of this beauty, and foretold its imminent destruction. There are many particulars, details, and specifics known to God that, if they were known to you, would change for the better the way you look at things. Jesus was confused that his disciples were taken in by the beauty of the stones used in the temple. A disciple of Christ must not be so superficial and selfish. The world you live in screams in your ear, "Do you see all these things?" While Jesus calmly inquires, "See ye not all these things?"